Culture Rich Conversations on Juno Afternoon is sponsored in part by Mark Stofa and Sarah Hannon of the Alaska Wild Salmon Company, delivering fresh salmon to Juno homes since 2006. Learn more at goodsalmon.com or 907-321-4997.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
Good afternoon and welcome to Culture Rich Conversations, a collaboration between KTOO and the Juno Black Awareness Association. I am your host, Kelly Patterson, and our guest today is Kenneth Muntz. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello, how are you?
I am doing well. I am so glad you can join us today. For some of our longtime listeners, you may remember Kenneth. He is my uncle, so it's always a privilege when I get to interview family. It's just nice to sit and chit-chat, and we actually don't get to do this as often as I would like, so I love it when my family is on the show. And Kenneth was on the show previously, and he talked about my family history and the legacy that our family has and how you can begin to research your own family history and how to go about that. So if you haven't heard that episode, please go listen. It is fantastic, and you will learn so much, not only about my family, but how to do some research in your own family. But this time, I have asked my uncle to come back to talk about Black music, and specifically to talk about the influence that Black music has had on the Black community. I was kind of perplexed because I had never really thought about the influence of Black music on the community. However, if you sit down and really think about it, it's almost hard to ignore. Would you say the same, Uncle Kenneth?
Yes, I would. You'd be amazed, especially after you get older and you look back on it and how it affects people. When we were listening to it back when I was younger, it was just like, oh, it's just entertaining, having a good time. But
right.
As you look back on it, you'll see the significance of how it created a lot of unity and actually galvanized people to make things better. You have to realize that music is an equalizer. You know, a lot of things were not equal when I was growing up, especially in the South, in Little Rock, Arkansas, where we grew up.
Let's just start with, like, your personal history. Like, what is your earliest memory of music? Was it in the family? What is it in the church? Was it both? What is your earliest memory of music?
Yeah, church and family goes hand in hand because, you know, the church has been one of the biggest star makers.
On me within the family dynamic was the fact that my older brothers and sisters were teenagers when I was a preschooler, and they introduced us to music, me and my brothers that were next to me. When we started school, a couple of them were in college. The younger of my two sisters was in high school, and she was the one who bought most of the music. She would make sure there was a stack of 45s in the house. And she also bought albums. And one of the most significant albums that she would always buy was anytime Aretha would come out with something.
Change, change, change.
I'm
was a product of the church. She was the daughter of a minister who saw at an early age that she had something special. And he would always showcase it. Her sound coming from the church was significant because it always brought joy to anyone who listened. Also, her talent moved people. Was universal. She was an award-winning artist. I'm not sure if it's still a record because of, but at one time she was the most decorated Grammy winner of all time as far as a vocalist. I want to mention that she had won like 8 straight Grammys for Best R&B Song. The first song that I can remember just loving was Stevie Wonder's Fingertips. He was a 13-year-old boy. Kelly, you know this. Your grandmother, my mom. Blind students. She was a teacher, so we were always fascinated by how intelligent they were, how they made up for their disability, how they used their other senses to be able to maneuver within their environment. And one thing I did notice was they had some great singers, great instrumentalists. And so we saw a 13-year-old blind boy singing. I can remember being 3 or 4 years old when Fingertips came out. Stevie Wonder's first song, you know, one where he said, "Everybody say yeah." If I was to list my first favorite song, that was it.
Right about now, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to continue with our show by introducing to you a young man that's only 12 years old. And he is considered as being a genius of our time. Ladies and gentlemen, let you and I make him feel happy with a nice ovation as we meet and greet little Stevie Wonder. How about that?
Song taken from my album, The Jazz Soul of Little Stevie. The name of the song is called Fingertips. Now I want you to clap your hand. Come on. Come on. Yeah. Stomp your feet. Jump up and down. Do anything that you want to do.
There once in a while I had to put that on and listen to it. It was great. He plays the harmonica doing this song. We thought it was outstanding. Developed into a conscious performer. He came out with songs that I remember he had a song called Heaven Help Us All.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone.
begin to fall.
He talked about the world was deteriorating and he wanted to say a prayer for the world. If you look through his music, not just his hits, but through his albums, Stevie always kept a high consciousness on what was going on and being concerned about people. And I want to mention that Stevie had one of the best albums ever made. And he did it all himself. But, well, he did the producing and arranging it himself. But he would go and get some of the greatest musicians for this album. And one of his greatest albums was Songs in the Key of Life. During this album, he did a tribute to some of his influences, like Duke Ellington and the song Sir Duke. He also did a song called Pastime Paradise, which was later sampled by Coolio. Talked about the significance of how we need to change. Me and my wife were blessed to go to Stevie's, I guess it was his 40th anniversary of releasing that album in a concert. He did a concert. And we went up to Little Rock, Arkansas. We drove from Houston to Little Rock to watch this concert where he did this whole album. It was a double album. Let me tell you about when this album came out, it's something else. This was the first time we saw a double album. Mm-hmm. You know, two albums, two actually discs within an album. And he put it wasn't a 45, it wasn't at 33 revolutions per minute, but it was a smaller disc in there, which was an EP. So he had, I can't remember how many songs that was. It has to be 24 or so. But he did that whole concert, followed the sequence of the songs exactly like they were on that album. Plus, he did some of his other stuff, too. But we went to see that concert, and I got to say it was one of the highlights of my music life, because I said I always wanted to see Stevie, and I didn't think I was going to get a chance, and I did. But that was great. I want to get back into the how Motown developed these artists. But like I said, being around all that talent rubs off on you. And like I said, they created super performers like Marvin Gaye.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, we don't need to escalate.
Marvin could do love songs. He could do songs to raise your conscience, songs about the ecology. Marvin was his personal life, he was a troubled individual.
It seems like a lot of them were.
Yeah, I think most of that has to do with, you have to realize you don't make a whole lot of money from records. Hmm. So they had to tour. And I think that put a lot of pressure on how they live their lives, getting up for touring. And that's across any music genres.
Right.
Not just black music, that's anywhere.
Yeah, the Elvis Presley had issues everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's the nature of the business is the beast, it's the bad side of it to be successful. But getting back to the significance of music within our community, the music, that's how much I realized how it kind of had us all thinking the same. Man, it not only enjoy the music. It brings back the memories, the things that we have in common. And music is a big unifier. That's the point I'm trying to make. Within our community, we were all inspired by James Brown, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud.
Say it loud.
We weren't seeing blacks on TV, but in entertainment, we could always tune in on Sunday night to Ed Sullivan and see the Temptations, the Supremes, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. Everybody that we've been hearing on the radio, we put a face to it because black music, she gave us pride. And that's the main reason I wanted to do a segment on music. It gave us a sense of being. It didn't happen a lot in my family, but a lot of people I know felt invisible. Our parents made sure that we weren't. This uplifted us. Music did. Mm-hmm. That's the gift that black music gives to society.
How old were you when you first started to realize the effect that black music had on the community? Were you a teenager, or do you think you realized it when you were little and you were going through the streets saying, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud?
I think some people don't understand the importance of being proud. You have to know that you're supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Uplifting society with every aspect of your day is important. And this is any culture that we're not as important as anyone else. And music did this for us. It let us know that there's talent there. You know, we were seeing talent, but as we get older and see what goes into the background of making this music, like right. The one I was making with Barry Gordy. He was just one example. Think of all the producers, everything to go into it. It takes brains to do this. It takes know-how, talent. It also takes some intuition. You got to know what works. You got to hone all these skills, and probably the hardest thing is putting all this together.
Right. When songs like, you know, James Brown, I'm Black and I'm Proud came out, or when Marvin Gaye started singing What's Going On, or Aretha Franklin started saying Respect, how did the non-black communities respond to that? Did it depend on the artist? Did it depend on the time? Were you too young to know? Or was it kind of accepted because it was music and they just kind of took it as a universal acceptance as opposed to a political voice?
Well, from what I can see and what I can tell, even when I was discussing this with my wife the other day, we was talking about what I was going to talk about today. And I was telling her that what I found out once I started going to integrated schools is that the non-black people love these songs also. She said, mm-hmm. Yes. And she went to a predominantly white high school in Memphis. And I always said, these white people love this music.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes notice. And it's really not prejudice all the time. Sometimes it's just not being exposed.
Right.
Once you're exposed to certain things, you realize, hey, it's no different than what I've been seeing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
As far as society, there are some differences, but We hear this all the time. People have more things in common than are differences. You know, I have people say, I like someone to walk a mile in my shoes and see what I'm going through every day. Sometimes when we get some understanding, I tell you, if you put together a bunch of people with differences but throw music into the concept, you'll get their attention. Mm-hmm. And sometimes getting their attention is the start.
Music and food, I think. Music and food are the keys.
Yes. Oh, man. I'll have to go into that one day. Conversation.
I do have some more questions, but I think that right now is a good time to take a break, and we will be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Culture Rich Conversations, a collaboration between KTOO and the Juno Black Awareness Association. If you are just joining us, I am your host, Kelly Patterson, and I am joined with Kenneth Muntz, and we have been talking about the history of Black music and its effects on the community. And we are having just a wonderful conversation. And as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about all of the music that we've been talking about, and short of the one by Stevie Wonder, Fingertips, where he did at 13, I have probably heard of every song that Kenneth has mentioned. And that's pretty miraculous when you think about the fact that some of these songs are from like the 60s and 70s and 50s. And I wasn't born until the 80s. So my recollection of music from memory as to when it came out is probably the late 80s, early 90s of things that I just remember on my own. But these songs have been such a staple in my community, in my life, in my family, that they have transcended time. How do you think music has had the ability to transcend time? Do you think that it's because of the effect that it's had on the community, or because of the effect that it has on us as a people? I know that it's part of our history, but do you want to just talk about that a little bit?
Yes. All the things that you mentioned, the memories they bring.
Mm-hmm.
I could play a song. I would say, oh, this song was released 50 years ago. It still sounds good. You know, that's when you know that it transcends time. Also, the significance of the awareness that this music produces. Think of this. Here's a song that was before my time, but it was so significant. Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday.
Southern trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
That was significant, so socially significant, because sometimes when there's some ugliness going on, And we see that today, too. People don't want to talk about it. Don't want to bring it up. And if I bring it up, it's never to punish anybody or never to talk bad about anybody, but to create awareness so we won't have to go through times like that ever again. Another song, and this one is one of the most soulful songs I ever heard, by Sam Cooke, "A Change Is Gonna Come."
I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know
that song transcends time. I think it released around 1965. But if you could notice, when Obama was elected, you would hear this song all the time. Sam Cooke was one of those talents that came from the church, and he died before his time. One thing about we have to notice about people who die early, they forever stay the age they were when they pass. Like, we've never seen a aging Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
She'll forever be a goddess, okay? Because she passed young. Sam Cooke was a handsome man. He had a very smooth voice. It's like when he sung, he did it effortlessly. So he would forever be timeless. Oh, here's another Stevie Wonder song I want you to check out. "Living for the City." It was on his album called Intervisions. He talks about how Black people have to live in certain places. Let me give you another song when things started to change and people wanted to make note of what was going on in society. "The Temptations, Bowels of Confusion." It played like a rap song. This was before rap. And I really don't know who wrote this. I'm going to have to go into it, but most of the Motown song, their inner writers did the writing. They had some great writers. Holland, Dozier Holland, Ashford and Simpson. Just a slate of writers that were awesome. But the best one, the best writer that Motown ever had was Smokey Robinson. They call him Mr. Motown. It never would have been a Motown if it wasn't for him. He got in there in the early ages. Him and Barry was the one who built the company. And he was just awesome. His rhyme schemes, if you listen to some of his songs, "More Love," he would mix words. He was a outstanding poet, and he had a silky voice, so it was always success with him. Through all the people who went through Motown, he started it off. Him and Barry are still here.
I think that it's amazing that not only did they influence like political culture, but they've influenced just like the family. Like, my father and I danced to "Isn't She Lovely" at my wedding. People danced to "My Girl." You know, my parents singing Stevie to me as a child. You think about, oh, my grandmother used to sing that all the time. Or the things that people would say around the house coming from songs that they used to hear. So I just think that it's so amazing how they would put so much life and soul and emotion into just what they were writing and what they were saying and how they expressed themselves. Like, it's just amazing. Just amazing.
It's one more song I want to put into this. Music can make change also. Years before they made Martin Luther King's birthday a national holiday, and they were actually campaigning to make sure this become a holiday, Stevie Wonder went on a quest to ensure that it becomes a holiday. That's where the song "Happy Birthday" came from. It came out years before the Martin Luther King holiday was actually passed by Congress.
The black happy birthday we're talking about. Happy birthday to you. If you go to a black party, you're going to hear the regular happy birthday and you're going to hear the black happy birthday. And we only know that one part. And it wasn't until recently I realized that the song was actually really long.
Yes. Just not those.
Right. Those happy birthday lines, right? Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that was the history behind that.
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Stevie was very significant in making sure that was fast. Not only did he do that song, he got out there and did the campaign.
When you think back about black music, do you think that it will continue to influence the black community? Do you think that it currently is?
Oh, yes, it will. It will continue. Even when black music kind of went into the more urban type of setting, such as rap music and hip-hop, the first songs I heard in hip-hop were, you know, party songs, being boastful, but when Grandmaster and the Furious Five put out The Message, you remember that song, It's Like a Jungle Sometimes, that made me wonder how I keep it going under. That was the first socially significant rap song.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
The success of that, even it won critic awards and so far, and that changed some things. You have to look deep. I think the press will demonize rap a lot because there are some that are negative, and you know, and the rappers come with the thing, well, we're just telling the truth. But if you look, there are some socially significant messages, positive messages within hip hop. And as long as people are making music, that's a voice. As long as you're using your voice and uplift people or create awareness, it's going to continue. It's going to continue to be a game changer.
Yeah. I just love to hear artists coming up with something new and having something new to say and really making us question how we've done things or how we've believed or what we've thought and how we've gone about that thought process. So I think that music will continue to do that and continue to shape minds and ideas and help mold that into something different, even for my kids. It'll be interesting to see what they're listening to in 20 years and if we'll be sitting here thinking, like, our music was better, you know? But I'm excited. I think that I love music and the effect that it has on people and how it can change your mood and unite people. I think we talked a lot about how music can unite and equalize the playing field and gives people a voice. And I think that it's important to recognize that.
Anxious to see how the changes are going to be, only because there's going to be more people within the music industry with the technology that we have today, the venues that we can do. They got YouTube, they got people coming up on Instagram being noticed and so forth. There's going to be more volume as far as how many people are going to be able to get into the game or get their verse heard, okay? Right. So I'm anxious to see how this will change the dynamic.
That's an interesting point because, you know, when we were talking about black radio and how, you know, if you wanted to listen to black music, you had to go to black radio. So it kind of unified. But now it's almost as if there's so many avenues to get music that you can go into your own little private lane and not have to venture a whole lot, you know, like not very many people when they get in their cars and they go for a drive are listening to the radio. It's wonderful to be on public radio and to have this show. But, you know, there are so many other avenues where people are very streamlining what they're listening to so that it's very specific. And I hear what you're saying. I haven't thought about that before, but I hope that we don't lose that community and that nationwide unification that music has brought in the past, because we can so specifically pick and choose what we want to hear and who we want to tell it to us.
And we could only hope that it brings positive aspects to people getting together and being as one. It's all right to have your favorite type of music that you want to listen to and so forth, but I feel like that at some point we ought to be able to play one song that everybody loves.
Right. You know? You want to have that one universal anthem, at least every few years, that everybody can get behind.
Right, right.
So, Kenneth, as we're speaking of the universal songs, if you had to pick one universal song for right now, what would that song be?
For now. I'm going to have to go back. I don't know if this one, well, it's for now, because this song came out of a world calamity. And it brought a lot of people together, and everybody could sing it at the time. You remember when they were having a famine in Africa? And after one of the Grammy Award shows, everybody got together in one place and came up with the song, We Are the World.
Mm-hmm.
That song kind of show how people can unite in a disaster.
Right.
Disaster brings out the best in people. You ever notice after a tornado or something, neighbors will go help each other. After a flood, people get out in boats. And, you know, that's when the human aspects come into things. That day, the human aspect came into helping people through the talent of the people who were gathered at that time. And I thought that was amazing.
That was a good one. I remember that one. That one is in my lifetime, and it was good. And it had all kind of incredible artists were there. Michael Jackson was there. Stevie Wonder was there. There was a whole bunch of people that participated in that song. That's an amazing choice. I like that.
Music brings out the best in us. And it actually does.
It does. And with that, Uncle, that includes our show. As always, it is a pleasure interviewing you. I'm humbled by the opportunity to just get to sit and talk with you. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon for another episode of Culture Rich Conversations. We are a collaboration between KTOO and the Juno Black Awareness Association. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, and have a wonderful afternoon.
Here comes the time. If we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, and it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all.
We can't go on. Somewhere we'll soon make a change.
We are all a part of God's great family. And the truth, love is all we need.